chapter 6 ended with the departure of Narada Muni. He had come just when Srila Vyasadeva had compiled all the Vedic literatures and was feeling great despondency in his heart, even though he had done such a wonderful thing. He still did not feel complete. He wondered what the cause of this was, this sense of incompleteness, alienation, failure. What was wrong? He thought, even before Narada Muni had come, he thought that possibly the cause of this was that he had not directly glorified Krishna in the Vedic literatures. And just as he was thinking like that, Narada Muni descended. And later on, at the end of the sixth chapter, we heard how Narada Muni gained the potency to just descend in that way, because he could travel everywhere in creation perfectly free just by chanting the glories of Krishna, the transcendental glories of Krishna, on his transcendental veena, tambru, his tambura. Immediately, Narada Muni said, "This is the problem. No Bhagavad Dharma. No direct glorification of Krishna. If we compile so many other literatures, if they don't directly satisfy the senses of the Lord, they are compared to the what? If they are not actually transcendental, what are they compared to? Yes, for crows. Garbage-filled place where crow type of animals who have such a nasty sound of their voice even, caw, caw. And they love those garbage-filled places. And on the other hand, those literatures, even if they're imperfectly composed, if they are direct in the glorification of Krishna, they are of a different caliber. They are of a transcendental nature, and they can turn the heart of a person around. They are meant to create a revolution within the heart, at the deepest core of his heart, because the living entity, Krishna Bhule Se Jeev Anadiya Bahimukh, he has turned his back on Krishna. And these literatures, transcendental literatures, are meant to turn, affect the living entity in such a way that he turns again towards Krishna. Just like when we turn our back to the sun, then what do we see? We see a shadow. And that's what the material world is. It's a shadow of reality. We cause the material world in that sense. We cause the evil of the world in that sense by our turning our back on Krishna. And then if we turn towards Krishna, turn towards the sun again, then the result is no more shadow, no more darkness. So Srila Vyasadeva was instructed, he was given several instructions. Of course, so many instructions within this fifth and sixth chapters. But in text, I believe it's 13, yes, he says, Narada tells him, "O Vyas, your vision is completely perfect. You're already pure. Somehow you have written these other literatures, but you yourself understand things. Your good fame is spotless. You are firm in vow and situated in truthfulness, all the prerequisites. And thus you can think of the pastimes of the Lord in trance for the liberation of the people in general from all material bondage." So he instructed Vyas, you can understand everything through a trance. Go deeply through Krishna consciousness. You're already pure and understand everything. And then, in text 30, he gives further instructions in this regard. He says, after realizing everything in trance, 43 perhaps, no? Anyway, we'll find it in a moment. He tells him to write these things down. You write down this transcendental information in 21, 1521. He says, Narada tells Vyas, your goodness has perfect vision. You yourself can know the Supersoul Personality of Godhead because you are present as the plenary portion of the Lord. Although you are birthless, you have appeared on this earth for the well-being of all people. Please, therefore, describe the transcendental pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, more vividly. So go into trance, understand everything, and write everything down for the benefit of the people of this world. So, after Narada Muni left, and that was the last verse of chapter 6, after Narada Muni leaves, immediately, Shonaka Rishi, who is listening to the words of Suta Goswami, he says, O Suta, this is text 1 of chapter 7. The great and transcendentally powerful Vyasadev heard everything from Sri Narada Muni. So after Narada's departure, what did Vyasadev do? So Sutta began his reply in text 2. On the western bank of the river Saraswati, which was intimately related with the Vedas, there is a cottage for meditation at Samyaprash, which enlivens the transcendental activities of the sages. In that place, Srila Vyasadeva, in his own ashram, which was surrounded by berry trees, that berry trees is Badri. So it is Badri Kashram. And here in Braja, the Badri fruits, these little greenish, yellowish fruits that become ripe around Goponima or Holi. They are called locally bear fruit. Have you tasted bear fruit? Have you tasted? Yes? So he was surrounded by these Badri trees. So Vyas sat down to meditate. After touching water for purification, he did his achman, and then he sat down and began to enter into meditation. Now the next four verses, this 1, 7, 4, 5, 6, and 7, are very important. Very, very important. And Srila Jiva Goswami describes them at length in his Sandarbhas, explaining the importance of these verses. Because upon these verses, the Bhagavatam rests. This describes Srila Vyasadeva's meditation. Bhakti yogena manasi. First important point. Bhakti yogena. By this Bhagavad Dharma, through bhakti, through devotion, manasi, he placed his mind firmly in bhakti. Bhakti yogena manasi samyag pranhite amale. And it was perfectly engaged, free from, it was amal, no impurities, perfectly engaged in pure devotional service. He focused his mind on what? In bhakti. And then apashyat, he saw Purusham Purnam, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the complete person. Mayam chattar apashraya. And not only did he see the Lord, but he saw the external energy of the Lord. And this external energy of the Lord, and what is the name of the external energy of the Lord? Maya. So he saw the Lord, the Pashyat Purusha Puna Maya Chattara Pasraya. He saw also the Lord's external energy, and this energy was completely under the control of the Lord. We'll read Prabhupada's translation. Maya Chattara Pasrayam, Apasrayam, under full control. Two things he saw in his pure amale, pure bhakti yoga meditation with his pure mind. He saw the Lord, the complete purushapona, and he saw the Lord's external energy. So this is what Vyasadeva did. He followed immediately the instructions given to him by his guru, Sri Narada Muni. And he immediately went into trance of bhakti yoga. Thus he fixed his mind, perfectly engaging it by linking it in devotional service, bhakti yoga. That's what yoga means, connection through bhakti to Krishna. There is no other way. Bhaktyamam nabijaranti yavanyas chasmi tadvata. There is no other way actually to connect with Krishna completely. So this is what he did. And thus he saw the Absolute Personality of Godhead along with his external energy, which was under full control. Now this verse immediately defeats Mayavad philosophy. Because according to Mayavad philosophy, the absolute truth is ultimately impersonal, even though, of course, Brahmano hi pratishtaham and so many other verses Krishna explains. Aham savasya prabhavo mataksamam prabhatate. But in any case, the Mayavadis say that the absolute is impersonal, qualityless, formless. Of course, if you say it's impersonal, it has the quality of being impersonal, so it can't be qualityless. Or if, even if you say that it is qualityless, it has the quality of being without qualities, so it's not qualityless. So impersonalists and Mayavadis, rather, all they could say about the Absolute Truth actually is nothing. And then we will be happy if they say nothing. But immediately, what is their philosophy? Their philosophy is that the Absolute is impersonal, and somehow when a section, a part, it fragments, even though Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that the soul is unfragmentable, but when this impersonal fragments, it gets covered, or rather a part gets covered by Maya, and then it becomes Jiva. That the Absolute Truth becomes covered by Maya. Here it says that the Absolute Truth can't be covered by Maya. Maya, on the other hand, is completely under the control of the Absolute Truth, not that the Absolute Truth becomes controlled by Maya. So the impersonalists say that when the Absolute Truth becomes covered by Maya, it becomes Jiva, and when it becomes covered by the mode of goodness, it becomes Ishvara, or an incarnation. And therefore, they say that when Krishna comes to this world, he is covered, the Absolute Truth is covered by the mode of goodness. And therefore, ultimately, all his pastimes and activities are of the modes of material nature. And because they say that all the activities of the Lord and pastimes of the Lord are Maya, therefore they are called Mayavadis. They follow this path of Maya. another verse that Srila Vyasadeva, after this meditation, and we will hear this verse in the second canto, 7th chapter, 47th verse, there's one says that, Maya paraite abhimukhe cha balajamanam. What does laja mean? Shame or shyness. So Maya can't come before the Lord because of shyness. The external energy stays far away from the Lord out of her shyness because of her task of putting the illusory of placing the living entities under the illusory energy. So she stays, she can't go before the Lord any more than the shadow can go before the sun. So immediately, first thing, Mayavad philosophy defeated. And Prabhupada, as we would expect, in his purport, speaks about this. We'll read a little of Prabhupada's purport here. The external energy, this is about a little, almost two-thirds of the way down the purport. The external energy is compared to darkness, because it keeps the living entities in the darkness of ignorance. That is the function of Maya, to make us think that we are separate from Krishna. But actually, absolute truth means that nothing can be separate from it. There is no devil who has somehow escaped the Lord's control and is holding a rebellion in some part of the kingdom of God. No, then where is his absolute power? If there are rebellious forces and are succeeding fairly well. No, the living entity in illusion, his vision is cut off like a cloud covers our eyes. The cloud never covers the sun. But when the cloud covers our eyes, and all you have to do is go up into an airplane a few hundred or thousand feet up, and then the sun is visible, even on the most cloudy of days. Because it's our eyes that have been covered, not the sun. So we, tiny souls, Krishna bhule seji, forgetting Krishna, anadya bahimukh, turning our back, and atta eva, therefore what happens, maya tari, samsaredadu, gives us such internal energy is even superior to the spiritual bliss attainable in the conception of impersonal Brahman. So that energy, this Maya Shakti, was fully under the control of the Lord. His meditation continues. Yaya sammohito jiva atmanam trigunatmakam. Now there is a contrast here. Because on one hand, there was the Purusha Puna with the material energy completely under his control. But on the other hand, Yaya Sammohito Jiva, Sammohita Jiva, the living entities, Atmanam Trigunatmakam, they are conditioned or illusioned by that same Maya Shakti of the Lord, the external energy of the Lord. Paropi manyute narta tatkritam jabipadite. And therefore, because of the illusionment, his bewilderment, what is the first and basic bewilderment? It's an identification with the body as the self. And because of that, and all the succeeding bewilderments that are piled upon that, because as soon as we identify the body as the self, we identify everything connected with the body. The birth, the family, the possessions, the enemies. Everything also becomes a part of our self, our false self, our false ego. This is the nature of illusion. Just compounding and increasing so deep and dark. And desires based on the body, based on the mind, based on all the Upadis, all the layers of identities and designations that we place upon ourselves. Illusion. And because of all this illusion, we have to undergo so much suffering, beginning with birth and death, disease, old age, so many sufferings, continuous anxiety, basically. Just like if we have a car and we're driving along and someone, especially if it's a new car, especially a new red car, red means passion. New, flashy, shiny, expensive red car, and boom! Immediately, you hit me! You hit me? That's called ahankar. Identification with the body. We are not the car, but because of that identification with it, we feel the pain and we feel the anger. We actually feel pain, even though it has nothing to do with us. So everything in the material world, the more we possess, the more we try to add to our actual identity, the more illusion we are, the more pain, the more suffering, the more entanglement. And this is called anartha. So anartha, yes, paropi manyute nartam tatkvitam chabipadyute. Prabhupada's translation. Due to the external energy, the living entity, although transcendental to the three modes of material nature, thinks of himself as a material product and thus undergoes the reactions of material miseries. This is our situation in the material world. We'll read from the beginning of Srila Prabhupada's. The root cause of material suffering by the materialistic living being is pointed out with remedial measures which are to be undertaken, and also the ultimate perfection to be gained. All this is mentioned in this particular verse. The living being is by constitution transcendental to material encagement, but he is now imprisoned by the external energy, and therefore he thinks himself one of the material products. We identify with the body, and every cut, every scrape, every disease causes us so much suffering, so much anxiety. And due to this unholy contact, the pure spiritual entity suffers material miseries under the modes of material nature. The living entity misunderstands himself to be a material product. This means that the present perverted way of thinking, feeling, and willing under material conditions is not natural for him. But he has his normal way of thinking, feeling, and willing. The living being in his original state is not without thinking, willing, and feeling power. It is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita that the actual knowledge of the living, of the conditioned soul, is now covered by nescience. Thus, the theory that a living being is absolute impersonal Brahman is refuted herein. This cannot be because the living entity has his own way of thinking in his original unconditional state also. The present conditional state is due to the influence of the external energy, which means that the illusory energy takes the initiative while the Supreme Lord is aloof. The Lord does not desire that a living being be illusioned by external energy. The external energy is aware of this fact, but still she accepts a thankless task of keeping the forgotten souls under illusion by her bewildering influence. Anyone remember anything that we just heard? Without looking? Yes. Why? Why is it a thankless task? What is the thankless task? Yes. Is that Krishna's desire? No. So the illusory energy has to do this. And the Lord remains aloof when we are under the control of the illusory energy. Listen carefully. The Lord does not interfere with the task of the illusory energy, because such performances of the illusory energy are also necessary for the reformation of the conditioned soul. What was that sentence about? Why does the Lord keep aloof? Yes. Yeah? The Lord keeps aloof, and the living entities suffer in Maya. When we're young, we have so many plans, dreams, idealistic thoughts. It's going to be like this. It's going to be like this. Oh, my life is going to unfold in this way. Prince Charming will come, or this and that. But as we go through life, we actually see, become experienced about what the effect of trying to enjoy the material world is. But the material energy doesn't allow suffering in and of itself to make us into devotees, because the material energy will always provide another option of enjoyment. Yes, okay, you've had 3,200 cars, but this next one you're going to get is very, very special. This next one will be the one that you will always have been looking for. It will end that feeling of incompleteness that we all have. So suffering in and of itself doesn't bring one to God. But suffering is a fortunate thing if one has the piety to come in touch, the agyata sukriti, to come in touch with Krishna in so many other forms, and then we understand the actual situation. Yes, I'm just in the wrong place. And that is the problem. I'm looking in the wrong realm. Just like if we were very, very hungry and there was a mirror over here and there was a feast over here, what would be on the plate of the feast plate? What is your favorite? Samosa. Mine also. What would be there? More samosas? What? Some simple vegetables, humble brahmachari, gulab jamun, this, that, everything we want is there. And here's the mirror image of it. And how frustrated we are trying to eat the food from the mirror. We can see it, practically speaking. We can see it, it's right there, but nothing, no satisfaction. That is the material world. But that implies that in reality, the elements do exist. It's a reflection. So this is the job of Maya, thankless task. To just like you, sometimes you see birds, they come in front of a mirror, and they see, what do they see? They see a bird. This bird, look at this bird. I'm much stronger than him. Pam, pam. Oh, he seems quite strong. Pam, pam. Hits him again harder. He's fighting with himself, basically, only. That's the nature of the mirror. Very frustrating. The illusory energy. But it's necessary. It's necessary but not sufficient for the reformation of the conditioned soul. An affectionate father does not like his children to be chastised by another agent. Yet he puts his disobedient children under the custody of a severe man just to bring them to order. But the all-affectionate Almighty Father at the same time desires relief for the conditioned soul, relief from the clutches of the illusory energy. The king puts the disobedient citizens within the walls of the jail. But sometimes the king, desiring the prisoner's relief, personally goes there and pleads for reformation. He says, all of you, Just agree to follow the laws and then you'll be free immediately. So Krishna sometimes comes to this world. Sarvadamam pratyaja. Mamekam sharanam braja. Immediately. Masucha. Do not fear. Do not hesitate. Do not worry. And on his doing so, the prisoners are set free. So this is Krishna's mercy. This is the part that's necessary. Mercy. Krishna's descent into the material world in so many forms is his mercy, his kindness to the conditioned souls. Similarly, the Supreme Lord descends from his kingdom upon the kingdom of illusory energy and personally gives relief in the form of the Bhagavad Gita, whereas he personally suggests that although the ways of illusory energy are very stiff to overcome, one who surrenders unto the lotus feet of the Lord is set free by the order of the Supreme. What's the verse? Duratya, very difficult. But if Krishna orders, then it is not difficult. Very difficult to get out of the prison. But when the king says, release him, immediately you're out. So the trick of Krishna consciousness is how to get the release orders. Well, that's one of the tricks. That is the great trick. This surrendering process, that's what the Bhagavad Gita teaches, is the remedial measure for getting relief from the bewildering ways of the illusory energy. The surrendering process is completed by the influence of association. The Lord has suggested, therefore, but that by the influence of the speeches of saintly persons who have actually realized the Supreme, men are engaged in his transcendental loving service. This is what the Bhagavatam is about. Kapila Muni will specifically state this, Satam Prasangam Mamaviri Samvido. These conversations from the Sat, from the devotees, they are full of great potency. They are like medicine. Bhavoshadi Shotamanam Bharamat. Medicine poured in the ear. The conditioned soul gets a taste for hearing about the Lord, and by such hearing only is he is gradually elevated to the platform of respect, devotion, and attachment for the Lord. The whole thing is completed by the surrendering process. Herein, also, the same suggestion is made by the Lord in his incarnation of Vyasadeva. This means that the conditioned souls are being reclaimed by the Lord both ways, namely by the process of punishment by the external energy of the Lord and by himself as the spiritual master within and without. How is he the spiritual master within? As Chaitya Guru, is the Lord in the heart. What verse from the Bhagavad Gita? He's in everyone's heart. How wonderful that we're not neglected by Krishna. And without, he's the spiritual master without, as Guru, as Guru Maharaj in Guru Parampara. Within the heart of every living being, the Lord himself, as Supersoul, Paramatma becomes the spiritual master. And from without, he becomes the spiritual master in the shape of scriptures, saints, and the initiator spiritual master. This is still more explicitly explained in the next sloka. So the living entity, so he saw that the Lord is there. Through bhakti, he saw the Lord and he saw Maya completely under control. And then he saw that that same Maya that was under the control of Krishna had captured an illusion, the living entities, into thinking that they were the body, that they the enjoyer, Purusha, Prakriti, Stohi. I am Purusha, situated in Prakriti in the material world. Bhunkte, I will enjoy all the things, Prakriti, Sto, Guna. I will enjoy all these things. This is what Prakriti is meant for my enjoyment, with that Purusha Bhav, that mentality of being the Purusha, the conditioned soul just suffers. Birth, death, He sees the empire that he's created with his whole life stolen, ripped from him. Death. What pain. He has his whole life. He's built it up. And he sees his children all scheming. When is he going to die? How many more seconds so they can get inherit? And he's worked so hard for them. Oh, his heart aching, aching. And his body pain all over. What is the end of every Purusha? It is suffering, except, of course, for the real Purusha, not the illusion Purusha. So Vyasadeva saw this suffering caused by illusion. And remember, back in the fourth chapter, he envisioned what Kali Yuga was going to be like. He saw the incredible amounts of suffering. In previous ages, when goodness is prominent, there is peacefulness, there is some enjoyment. But in Kali Yuga, there is such suffering, and it's written on the faces of the people in such a heavy way. Such anxiety. People in their family life, they can't even be assured what's going to happen. So much divorce, so much lawsuits, so much disease, so much anxiety, so much anxiety. So Vyasadeva saw this. And the result of that vision he had ultimately was this vision, this samadhi, where he saw Purushapona with Maya and the illusion under Krishna's control, but bewildering the living entities. So what is the solution to this? The next verse, also very important, explains that. Anarta upasamam shakshad. Because what was bewildering him, he had anarta means like gain or wealth. Anarta means those things that have no value, but we think are valuable. Illusory value. Value for suffering. So anarta upasamam shakshad. This is what he understood. This is what he did. That the material miseries of the living entities, which are superfluous from him, bhakti yoga marhoksha jay, they can be removed. All this misery and suffering can be removed by bhakti yoga to adhokshaja. By giving ourselves completely to Krishna, by surrendering to him, by becoming his. This is our natural position. We can't be separated from him. In illusion, by Maya, we think we are separate and we suffer. Imitatively trying to act as if we were something that we're not, the Lord. So he saw also that the anartas, all this suffering, the illusory mentality could be removed by bhakti yoga to the Supreme Lord. Lokasya, the people, ajanato vidvam. They don't know this though. Rather, due to the influence of materialistic propaganda, people think that the cause of my suffering can be removed by more materialism. I just need more. Whatever I think I'm lacking, I need more of it. I need more wealth. I need more family. I need more women. I need more men. I need all freedom to enjoy my senses. This just compounds the illusion a million times. So the people don't know. Lokasya ajanato vidvam. They don't know. And therefore, chakre satvita samhita. He compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam, the samhita, the Vedic literature for the devotees, the Paramhansa samhita, the Bhagavatam. And therefore, Prabhupada spent so much time translating this book and insisting it become printed and distributed. Prabhupada's translation. The material miseries of the living entity, which are superfluous to him, they're superfluous. They're all on the mental and bodily level and with souls. Can be directly mitigated by the linking process of devotional service. But the mass of people do not know this, and therefore the learned Vyasadeva compiled this Vedic literature, which is in relation to the Supreme Truth, everything in relationship to Krishna. And we'll read that purport. This we'll read the seventh text first. Yasyam vai shuyamanayam Krishne paramapuruse. Just by giving reception, this is the potency of the Bhagavatam. Yasyam vai shuyamanayam, just by giving or reception, listening to this Bhagavatam, Krishne parama puruse, Krishna, that supreme person. So in case there was any doubt who that parama purusha was from the first verse of his what he saw, bhakti yoga, manasi, samyanite, apasya purusha pona. In case there's any doubt, who is that pona purusha, the complete person? Krishne parama purusha. Just by giving all reception to this Vedic literature, this Bhagavatam, this Satvita Samhita, Krishna, that supreme person. Bhaktir utpadyate pumsam. Bhakti for that supreme person sprouts up by hearing this Bhagavatam. And what dies when the bhakti sprouts? Shoka. What is shoka? Lamentation. Moha. Bhaya. All destroyed. So what compassionate work the society that Prabhupada created has. Because really the people are suffering. Simply by giving oral reception to this Vedic literature, the feeling for loving devotional service to Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, sprouts up at once to extinguish the fire of lamentation, illusion, and fearfulness. So this was the result of Vyasadeva's meeting with Narada Muni and his mature revelation of Krishna consciousness. The result was the Bhagavatam that is so powerful, Sokamoha Vyapaha. And bhakti sprouts within the heart just by giving oral reception to it. Very wonderful. Prabhupada's purport 2.6. Srila Vyasadeva saw the all-powerful personality of Godhead. The statement suggests that the complete unit of the personality of Godhead includes his parts and parcels also. He saw, therefore, his different energies, namely the internal energy, the marginal energy, and the external energy. He also saw his different plenary portions and parts of plenary portions, namely his different incarnations also, and he specifically observed the unwanted miseries of the conditioned souls who were bewildered by the external energy. So he saw everything, the absolute truth, which includes all the energies of the Lord. That was his meditation. At last, he saw the remedial measure for the conditioned souls, namely the process of devotional service. It is a great transcendental science, and beginning with the process of hearing and chanting the name, fame, glory, etc. of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and begins with that. Revival of the dormant affection or love of Godhead does not depend on the mechanical system of hearing and chanting. So it is not mechanical. But it solely and wholly depends on the causeless mercy of the Lord. When the Lord is fully satisfied with the sincere efforts of the devotee, he may endow him with his loving transcendental service. So everything depends on Krishna, on Krishna's mercy. So it is a descending process, not an ascending process. But, Prabhupada continues, even with the prescribed forms of hearing and chanting, there is at once mitigation of the superfluous and unwanted miseries of material existence. Somewhere else in the Bhagavatam, I can't remember where, but there's one verse that says that if one hears the Bhagavatam, all one's lamentations and miseries will go away, at least during the time one is hearing it. Such mitigation of material affection does not wait for development of transcendental knowledge. Rather, knowledge is dependent on devotional service for the ultimate reason. And we'll read some of Prabhupada's purport to 7. We'll start at the beginning. There are various senses of which the ear is most effective. This sense works even when a man is deep asleep. One can protect himself from the hands of an enemy while awake, but while asleep, one is protected by the ear only. The importance of hearing is mentioned here in connection with attaining the highest perfection of life, namely getting free from three material pangs. Everyone is full of lamentation at every moment. He is after the mirage of illusory things, and he is always afraid of his supposed enemy. These are primary symptoms of material disease, and it is definitely suggested here that simply by hearing the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, one gets attachment for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. And as soon as this is affected, the symptoms of the material disease disappear. Srila Vyasadeva saw the all-perfect personality of Godhead, and in this statement, the all-perfect personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is clearly performed. Krishna Parama Purushe. The ultimate result of devotional service is to develop genuine love for the Supreme Personality. Love is a word which is often used in relationship with man and woman. And love is the only word that can be properly used to indicate the relation between Lord Krishna and the living entities. The living entities are mentioned as Prakriti in the Bhagavad Gita. And in Sanskrit, Prakriti is a feminine object. The Lord is always described as the Paramapurusha, or the Supreme Male Personality. Thus, the affection between the Lord and the living entities is something like that between the male and the female. Therefore, the term love of Godhead is quite appropriate. Loving devotional service to the Lord begins with hearing about the Lord. There is no difference between the Lord and the subject matter heard about him. The Lord is absolute in all respects, and thus, there is no difference between him and the subject matter heard about him. Therefore, hearing about him means immediate contact with him by the process of vibration of the transcendental sound. And the transcendental sound is so effective that it acts at once by removing all material affections mentioned above. And then the last part of the purport where Prabhupada explains the conclusion. The conclusion is that simply by hearing the Vedic literature, Srimad Bhagavatam, one can have direct connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. And thereby, one can attain the highest perfection of life by transcending worldly miseries, illusion, and fearfulness. These are practical tests for one who has actually given a submissive hearing to the readings of Srimad Bhagavatam. So, Srila Vyasadeva compiled Srimad Bhagavatam. After compiling, this is text 8, the great sage Vyasadeva, that after compiling the Srimad Bhagavatam and revising it, taught it to his own son, Srila Sukadeva Goswami, who was already engaged in self-realization. So, we've just completed the answer to the question that the sages of Namasharanya asked way back, perhaps in the second, not way back in the beginning of the fourth chapter, about what was the history of Vyasadeva's compiling the Bhagavatam. This was it. And now the other question that the sages asked, headed by Shonaka Rishi, why was it that Vyasa's son, Sukadeva, who was already a fully realized transcendentalist, he had no attachment to his body. He had no attachment to anything in this world. He had no attachment to his family. He was Brahman realized, fully situated on that level. Why was it that he undertook the great endeavor to study this literature that was 18,000 verses long, a huge literature? He had no desires. He didn't want anything. What inspired him to study that this literature, the Bhagavatam? The sages asked that because they knew that Sukadeva Goswami had spoken this Srimad Bhagavatam to Maharaj Parikshit, and at that time, Suta Goswami was present and he heard it, and now Suta Goswami was speaking it to them. So they knew that Sukadeva had heard it, and they knew that he had spoken it. What inspired this Brahman realized person to study such a vast literature? And the answer to that comes very soon. Sri Shonoka asked Suta Goswami, Sri Sukadeva Goswami was already on the path of self-realization, and thus he was pleased with his own self. He was an Atmarama. That means, Rama means pleasure, Atma, he was feeling full satisfaction in his own self. He was self-realized. He was ecstatic on that level. Then why did he take the trouble to undergo the study of such a vast literature? And the answer to that is a very important verse that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught twice, once to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and after he completed teaching this to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya understood that he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then Sanatana Goswami heard that he had taught this verse to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and he asked Mahaprabhu to again teach him. And Mahaprabhu taught this verse to Sanatana Goswami, and he explained so many new meanings without touching the meanings that he had explained to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. So a very important verse. Suta Uvacha, he explained what caused Sukadeva to study onward, even though he was self-realized in the verses. I can't remember where, but it's in Madhya Lila, I think 6. I have the reference. Yes? So, Atmaramas cha munajo nigrantapi urukrame kuvanti ahaitu kim bhaktim itam bhuta guna hari. Everyone. Atmaramas cha munajo nigrantapi urukrame kuvanti ahaitu kim bhaktim itam bhuta guna hari. All different varieties of Atmaramas, those who take pleasure in knowing or self-satisfied in knowing their selves, especially those established on the path of self-realization, though free from all kinds of material bondage, they desire to render unalloyed devotional service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This means that the Lord possesses transcendental qualities and therefore can attract everyone, including liberated souls. This is the nature of Krishna. He's all attractive, even to those who are beyond the material energy. He attracts them. And therefore, in the Bhaktivedanta Sindhu Nectar of Devotion, Srila Rupa Goswami, when he describes the power of Bhava Bhakti, and he calls it Moksha Lagudakrit, which means it is more attractive, it minimizes the bliss or the happiness one gets from liberation. It is so far superior to that. Srila Rupa Goswami quotes the Bhavarta Deepika of Sridhar Swami, a commentary on the Bhagavatam, where it says that if you take the bliss of Brahmananda, or Brahmananda, the bliss of touching or being in contact with Brahman, when you compare that to the material world, it is millions of times better. There is no anxiety, there is pure, clear consciousness. But if you take that bliss of Brahmananda and compare it to the bliss of devotional service, that is like a million times of that doesn't equal one drop of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, of the ocean of devotional service. Take Brahmananda, multiply it a million times, it doesn't equal even one drop of what Krishna consciousness actually is. So therefore it naturally attracted Sukadev Goswami. Because his consciousness was clear and pure, he could perceive the sweetness so easily, while those who are covered and contaminated cannot perceive it so easily. And the final verse we'll read. Srila Sukadev Goswami, son of Srila Vyasadeva, was not only transcendentally powerful, he was also very dear to the devotees of the Lord. Thus he underwent the study of this great narration, Srimad Bhagavatam. So Srila Jiva Goswami explains that he was attracted from, Sukadev was attracted from Brahman, and his heart was captivated by the Bhagavatam, by Krishna. And by discussion with devotees, the devotees became dear to him and he became dear to the devotees. So he became Vishnu Jana. He became dear to the devotees of the Lord. He became a Vishnu Jana and he was dear to them. So I wanted to read these last purports, but I need time. I'll read some comments. You've already read those. Commenting on 177, Sridhar Swami, that's the verse that describes Yasyam Vai Shriyamanayam Krishne Paramapuruse. He says, Sridhar Swami says that the Bhagavatam destroys evil within the heart. In addition, devotion to Krishna is generated at the time of hearing Bhagavatam, so it cleans the heart and also allows devotion to sprout up. We can thus imagine the result when the hearing is complete, when one is mature. The Garuda Purana glorifies the Bhagavatam as perfectly complete. This is what the Garuda Purana says about the Bhagavatam. It is perfectly complete. It is the purport of Vedanta Sutra. It establishes the meaning of the Mahabharata. It is a commentary on Gayatri Mantra, and it completes the message of the Vedas. It is the Sama Veda amongst the Puranas, spoken directly by the incarnation of God Vyas. This work, consisting of 12 cantos, hundreds of chapters, and 18,000 verses, is called the Srimad Bhagavatam. In 178, the word Kritvanu Kramya, after compiling and revising, indicates that Vyasadeva originally compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam at the time of his compilation of the Puranas. That compilation, however, was in an abbreviated form later, after having been instructed by Narada Muni and after his realization had matured in trance. Vyasadeva revised the Bhagavatam. And on 1711, the verse we just read, this Sukadev Goswami describing, was not only transcendentally powerful, he was dear to the devotees, and therefore he underwent the study of the Bhagavatam. Sridhar Swami comments on that verse. He said, let Sukadev Goswami become a devotee, but what was the necessity for him to learn the vast scripture? He then answers his own question. He did so because he was attracted to Harikatha, to hearing about Krishna. Thus, after his study of the Bhagavatam, Sukha became Vishnu Janapriya, beloved to the devotees of the Lord. It's basically also explained in the Nectar of Devotion, the same thing, in the modes of material nature. And then if you combine those, basically the same. There's different varieties of the modes that affect us, and we bring that to our devotional service. And then when our hearts are pure, our devotional service becomes pure devotional service. Okay, you want to enjoy? Go ahead, try. Then you try, and then boom! Oh, that really hurt. But I have another idea how to avoid the slap and really enjoy this time. So instead of going like this, I'm going to go like this. And then the mouse trap catches us. More suffering. So, and on, our life is spent in that way with an attempt and then the pain that comes with it. And when we succeed in accumulating something, that itself is a cause of suffering because we're always fearful that we're going to lose it. And then we become afraid of everyone else because they threaten us. So material life is suffering because we're not meant for material life. So that doesn't work independently. That isn't enough to bring one to Krishna, but that's Krishna's method of pushing. You want to enjoy. Attaiva mayatari samsareda duk. Birth after birth after birth, suffering after suffering, disease. But don't worry, we're going to have a vaccination within a few years and you'll cure that disease. Don't worry. Trust me. Trust us, the scientists. But make sure you keep paying. But you trust us, we'll be able to cure all disease. You'll have an artificial lung, an artificial leg, an artificial head, an artificial heart, an artificial kidney, and you'll live forever in this way. Just trust us. But the result is suffering. We're making so much progress. Yes, yes, yes. The result is anxiety, suffering. Until by association of devotees, or even just piety, one realizes no. I don't want to have anything to do with that system anymore of trying to be happy. I want to get out. And that comes by hearing, basically. Did you want to add anything? So Krishna... Yes, so Krishna spoke to you from within due to some piety. And then when you... And then when someone who has suffered greatly, when they come in contact with purity and truth, then immediately they realize, yes, this is what I was looking for. This is why. And then that suffering becomes your friend because it has relentlessly pushed you. But that's only if someone is pious. If someone is impious, they turn away from Krishna. Namam duskritino muda padyante naranama. The four kinds of pious souls, sukritino arjuna, arta gigyasa arta ti, jnani cha bharatasa. Any other comments, questions? Yeah.
No,
but explains something in between. I don't know what he's doing, but he had a transcendental body that was suitable to associate with the Lord, because just as soon as lightning strikes, immediately illumination. Soon as this material body died due to his purity, by Krishna's grace, he developed a spiritual body. So there was a long time in between the annihilation, and it doesn't say, and I don't know what he did, but he did something quite wonderful, I'm sure. because he had a spiritual body. Prabhupada had a spiritual body. That when one had any association with Prabhupada, it was clear. Yes? It had such a presence, an effulgence and presence to it. Such a sweetness. There was no material time. There was no material time. But he was still doing something. He was preaching. Because in his life, he was chanting the glories of the Lord, hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. And in his death, after death, there's a Bengali saying that it's got to do with a dinky. I can't remember what it is, but I actually saw one of these implements. The Bengali saying is, whether a denki is in heaven or in earth, it does the same thing. It's a spice crusher that the ladies in a village use. They can hold their baby, and just with their foot they step on these things, and someone moves the spices in and out, and it just... So it only has one purpose. Whether it's in this village or in that village or in heaven or hell, it can only do one thing. So similarly, a devotee is like that. Just glorify Krishna, hear about Krishna, preach. This is what they have in their heart. So Narada Muni was that kind of a devotee, that quality of devotee. He was pure. So whether he visits hell, or heaven, or Goloka, or wherever he visits, the same thing, serving Krishna. Yes? A little more love. Sorry now. But not fully self-realized. He wasn't before. No, he wasn't. He was fully renounced and self-realized in the sense that he was... understood his self as a soul. That means no anxiety, no moods, no tinges by the modes of material nature, no fear, no material happiness, no material distress, no lamentation. Brahma-bhuta prasanatmana sochitina kankshati sava-samashibhuteshu. So on that, he was on that platform. His consciousness was as clear as a stream of water that had no impurities in it. And on that stage, although he was tasting the sweetness of the self, when he heard these verses of the Bhagavatam, he became attracted. He easily became attracted because his consciousness didn't have the impurities of passion and ignorance. And then he became Vishnu Janapriya. Then he became dear to the devotees, not before. Because the devotees don't so much like the association of the impersonalists. But when he became, when he heard the Bhagavatam and discussed it with the devotees, discussed Krishna, then he became Vishnu Janapriya. Huh? You have to be a devotee. You have to have that Bhagavad Dharma. You have to have a serving mood. Renounced is one thing. Good means good. It means not passionate, not ignorant. Sadvam sanjayate jnanam. That brings knowledge that we are not, that we are eternal souls. That brings that realization. It's the doorway to liberation. But that doesn't attract Krishna. Or Krishna's mercy. There's something much more wonderful than that and much more hard to achieve. Krishna will give mukti. He will give liberation easily if that's what a soul wants. But his bhakti, he holds back, and therefore bhakti is sadolava. Because it depends on his mercy, it's descending. Yeah. It's, Prabhupada's talking about the rasas, clearly. No. This is something different. This is what? I'm sorry? Passive means shantaras. So if you begin to get active, then it can, then adherence, meaning it must mean, Prabhupada must mean some type of servitorship, dasyaras, and then friendly devotee, sakha, parental, and then, yeah, this is actually Ujjana Nalamani type of more high type of thinking, because there's different characteristics of each of the rasas, and one, and there are different ecstasies that one can have depending upon the rasa. So the highest one, there are, I think there's, I can't remember, 7 or 8. So the highest one is only obtainable by the gopis. They contain all, their ability to taste is the highest. It contains all the other ecstasies that are given. So that's what Prabhupada's actually referring to. Different stages, pranaya, mana, bhava, mahabhava. Yes, this is after prema. Yes, exactly. Yes. Oh, I wanted to read that. But Ken, what about it? Okay. What verse? Okay. What is the second to last paragraph? By his personal features, or yes? Okay. By his personal features and transcendental attributes, the Lord attracts all psychological activities of a pure devotee, such as the attractive power of Lord Krishna. The attraction is so powerful that a pure devotee never hankers for any one of the four principles of religion. These are the attractive features of the transcendental attributes of the Lord. So what are the psychological functions? Usually Prabhupada refers to them as thinking, feeling, and willing. So our thinking is would be completely attracted to Krishna. Our feeling, our willing, our desiring, Krishna completely overwhelms them with his attractiveness. So one can't think of anything but Krishna and serving him. One can't will anything. Even if one wills, desires to do something other than serve Krishna, that will, external will, is completely overwhelmed by the attractiveness of Krishna. Like the gopis, they were in their houses taking care of their children, and Krishna played his flute, dropped everything, and just ran to Krishna, overwhelmed by the desire, by being their attraction to him, completely overwhelmed. So this is pure devotion. Any other questions or comments? So everyone read all these purports? Good, thank you. And I don't feel so bad that I didn't read them out loud. He has so many attractive qualities that he attracts the mind and heart of a pure devotee. That's Krishna, the Olaj. Thank you. We've finished the second section now of the first canto, and we've heard so much about Krishna. Heard so much. He's so attractive that even a pure soul who has not even the slightest tinge of attraction to anything in the material world, like Sukadeva Goswami, is attracted to him. Just by hearing about him, soka moha bayapaha, miseries, illusion, fear, and next we shall meet him. And that's what we do on Monday. We shall have our first introduction to Krishna. Very astounding. We'll meet the all-attractive Supreme Person. We'll chant like we did last Saturday. We chant and heard and we read in that way. Saturday evening we'll, from 7 to 8, we'll do the same. And everyone is invited, and you can bring your friends too. Not closed. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Narada Muni ki jai, Sri Vyasadeva ki jai, Sri Sukadeva Goswami ki jai, Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai.